quorum. We can call the Resources Committee meeting to order. And on the agenda today, we've got a series of fishing bills. And what we'd like to start off with is, we heard testimony at the previous meeting when they were in town here from the two commissioners that are up for the AOGCC slots. And what we'd like to do is take a vote on those two. We've already heard the testimony. They are online. If you have any questions for them, that's fine. We'll follow that up with Representative Guerra's HB 37, the Public Access to Fishing Streams, followed by the hatchery cost recovery. And then if we can get to it, we'll get to 251. HB 241, we're going to hold over and try to start the hearings on Monday. That'll probably be a couple of days of hearings on that. So, and that's probably all we'll get to today. We'll get to the confirmation. We'll get to Guerra's 37. We'll get to Thomas's 218. And if we have time, we'll get to my 251. And that'll be the order that we've got right now. So moving on, we've got Kathy Forrester online here from AOGCC if anybody has a question. And if not, if nobody has a question, I'd accept a motion to forward to the body the name of Kathy Forrester to the AOGCC. Crawford has made that motion. In attendance also we have Olson, Samuels, Elkins, Ledoux, and Crawford. Is there any objection to forwarding the name of Kathy Forrester on to the body for the AOGCC slot? Hearing none, we will do that. Accept a motion to move the name of Dan Seamount on for the to the same body.
Make that motion too. Okay.
Representative Crawford, thank you very much. We will forward the names on. Is there any objection to forwarding Mr. Seamount's name on for the AOGCC slot? Hearing none, we'll do that, and Mr. Webb will pass around the paperwork for that. Moving on, we're going to go to Representative Guerra for HB 37. It's entitled An Act Relating to Voluntary Land Trades and Purchases to Enhance Public Access to Fishing Streams. And welcome to Resources, Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm going to be really quick, and I'll just let you ask questions if you have them. The HB 37 tries to ensure that in the future we can continue to have public access to our fishing streams. There are a lot of fishing streams throughout the state, especially on the road system right now, that people enjoy, like the Anchor River, Deep Creek for steelhead and salmon, the Parks Highway creeks for trout and grayling. Where people walk up and down the rivers with their families, they fish these rivers, and similar situations around the state where the land is actually privately owned right now. Nobody's developed it. Nobody's built lodges on it. Nobody's put no trespassing signs on it. One of these days, those lands will be developed, and then one of these days, some of our greatest resources are going to be closed to public access. So the goal of this bill is to make sure we don't go down the road that they've gone in other states where the public loses access to its fishing streams. And this bill sets up a procedure within the Department of Fish and Game and DNR where they identify lands that would be very useful for public access, very important fishing streams. And it doesn't require that they try to purchase them or do land trades for them, but it says we ask them to consider doing that. And then that's subject to a legislative appropriation or them getting grant money from outside. The program set up in this bill is completely voluntary. It's if the landowner wants to sell, that's great. If they don't want to and they want to put up a no trespassing sign, that's totally up to them too. So all it does is it encourages the discussion. It encourages the process so that we can hopefully avoid making the mistakes so many other states have made on what were once great publicly accessible fishing streams.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Guerra. Are there any questions for Representative Guerra? Can't let him off the hook this
I'm
easy.
That would apply to Evos land. Evos is buying up or acquiring significant portions of the Kenai River, for example.
Yeah, it wouldn't do anything. I don't know what the Evos trust folks intend to do with that land. They probably intend to keep it publicly accessible, but this bill wouldn't affect that. We currently have a law in the state that says when the state possesses land, if it ever sells it, it should keep public access to and along. But this wouldn't mandate anything for the Evos land.
Thanks. Okay. Any other questions for Representative Guerra? Okay. I guess you're off the hook pretty easy today.
Uh, There's Kenai River Sport Fishing who looked over this bill noticed that there was a typo in the bill, and so Representative Crawford has a...
I would be happy to move the amendment once you take a look at it.
Okay. Is there anybody else in the audience that wants to testify on HB 37? And is there anybody online that wishes to testify on HB 37 that we haven't heard from yet? Hearing none, public testimony on HB 37 is closed, and we'll move to committee discussion. Representative Crawford.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move amendment number one, page 3, line 14, following use, insert sport.
And I'll object until I can find it here. I'll remove my objection. Is there any further objection to Amendment 1? Hearing none, Amendment 1 carries. Are there any other amendments that people have before the body? No? What's the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I'd make a motion to move House Bill 37, version L, out as amended with... no accompanying legal notes.
Okay. There are.
Oh, there are. Oh, I didn't see them. I'm sorry. With the accompanying physical notes.
And individual recommendations. Is there any objection to moving HB 37 as amended out of resources with attached physical notes and individual recommendations? Hearing none, HB 37 moves. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Take a brief at ease. Oh, we're going back.
Going back on the record. I didn't see him here. We will move on quickly to HB 218. We've got quite a bit of public testimony for 218, but we will start off right now. I would accept a motion to adopt the fisheries version of the bill for discussion purposes. 24LS054/I. That's what we're working off of.
Actually, there's another CS, Mr. Chairman, that the members should have. Version /L.
Don't have it, Ian. Oh, maybe we do here. Yep.
Along with 19 million other pieces of paper.
Huh. It's on your
desk. I got it now.
Does everybody have /L, the blank CS 24LS054/L in front of them? We accept a motion to accept that as a working document.
And so move.
Representative Elkins has moved that. Is there any objection? So we have the blank CS in front of us right now. Mr. Fisk.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ian Fisk, staff to Representative Thomas. Like the previous bill, this bill has a lot of options in it. It's a completely optional bill. This has to do with hatcheries and how they do their cost recovery. In other words, how they're going to harvest fish and recover part of the cost of doing business. The hatchery program in the state of Alaska has been very successful over the years. It provides a very large amount of fish for the commercial fishing industry and for common property users. Makes up about 30% of the salmon caught in the state every year in terms of volume, and about 25% by value. And so we want to say, first of all, that the hatchery program has done an excellent job of providing economic development in the state, and especially in our coastal communities. What this bill will do is provide another way by which hatcheries can do their cost recovery. Currently, the most common method of doing cost recovery is for hatcheries to have a bidding process, usually in the spring, and processors bid on the fish that are going to be caught by the hatchery. And so typically there's only a couple of vessels involved in the process from the commercial fishing fleet. This bill aims to give the hatcheries an option whereby they can recover their costs through the common property fishery, and which is really, you know, the intent of the hatchery program is to provide fish to fishermen. And so this is a way that they can get towards that. I want to reiterate again that the language is permissive. No hatchery will have to select to do things by this alternative method unless they feel it's in their best interest and they feel they can meet their fiduciary responsibilities. I guess what I can do is explain further some of the changes that are in the CS that the committee just adopted, and perhaps I will address any questions you have ahead of time. First of all, the most significant change is that we're changing the language that previously referred to special harvest areas. That is being changed to terminal harvest areas. And the difference is they both relate to specific hatcheries. A terminal harvest area is actually a slightly larger geographic boundary, but it's all, you know, still very close to given hatcheries. The difference is that the terminal harvest area can be adjusted, can be set by the commissioner and the Board of Fish, the Commissioner of Fish and Game or the Board of Fish, whereas a special harvest area is established only by the board. And the reason that we did this change is that this will keep the bill from upsetting any allocation plans. Hatchery fish are subject to allocation plans between gear groups such as gill netters, trollers, and seiners, and we do not want to change any of such plans. So that's an important change that you would see if you compared the two copies here. You would see that change throughout this new CS. Second of all, at the top of page 2, there's language that is, and I just wanted to make this point clear on behalf of the Department of Fish and Game, who asked me to clarify this issue. In the CS and in the bill as it has been drafted and revised along the process, the Commissioner of Fish and Game may adopt regulations governing the harvest of surplus salmon at hatcheries. And then the Board of Fish, also further down on page 2, may adopt regulations as well. And that's because regulations that have to do with any allocative changes must be done by the Board of Fish. The commissioner designee of the Department of Fish and Game and some of their staff have some concerns that this bill may affect allocation. We believe it won't, but we have worked with them well through this process, and we've both committed to resolving that issue in a way that will be amenable to the department, before the bill passes through the rest of the process. But the department wanted to make it clear that they had no intent of asking the committee not to adopt and move the bill today. Furthermore, let's see, page 2, line 12. This was just a drafting error, or an omission. It used to just say the board may adopt regulations. The hatchery operators pointed out at the last meeting that we should specify that we're talking about the Board of Fish there and not the hatchery boards. So we made that clarification. And then also line 16, we made a change. It used to say administrative area, and we've specified that it should read fishing district, so that participation in the fishery must be open to all interim use permit and entry permit holders who hold permits to operate a type of gear that may be used in the fishing district in which the terminal harvest area is located. Again, that's clarifying that no allocative changes should be made. Let's see here, page 3. Section D was substantially rewritten at the request of Stephen Daugherty and the Attorney General's office, and he's online to further explain what their rationale was here. But they just wanted to make sure that because the Department of Revenue is going to be the agency that sets the annual rate, that we had proper language in there to clarify that they do have the authority to do so. Page 3, line 23, also includes some language relevant to the Department of Revenue, which says that because basically what we're going to be doing in this bill is taxing, putting an assessment on the fleet, and that assessment will be collected by the state, which means that the revenue has to pass through the legislature for appropriation, just like a number of, just like any other revenue of the state. And what we want to do is make this a user pay system. And so what the language that we have in here says that the legislature may also appropriate funds collected under this section to the Department of Revenue for costs incurred by the department under this section. And that's partially because this is going to end up being kind of an experimental way of doing this business, and we don't expect to have hatcheries just bursting at the seams to change their way of doing business, but we're providing an option here that it's a little bit hard to anticipate what the costs to the department are going to be. We believe that they're going to be minimal in terms of their administrative cost of looking at this, but we want to make sure that whatever those costs are, we're encouraging with this language, we're encouraging the legislature to include money in the Department of Revenue's budget to cover those costs. And then in page four, there's a new section four. We added this at the request of one of the hatchery associations that testified at the last hearing, and this would make the salmon that are harvested under this new method would be subject to the 3% salmon enhancement tax. And previously, fish that were harvested for cost recovery were exempt from that tax, but since this is going to be through the common property fishery, we are specifying that they will be subject to that 3% additionally. And I think that explains all the changes. Are there any questions?
Questions for Mr. Fisk? We've got quite a few people to testify now, so you're not going anywhere, I'm assuming?
Nope. Not if you don't want me to.
Oh, we don't want you to.
Thank you.
Okay, well, we'll start off in Ketchikan. Is Jim Bacon with us? Are you with us, Jim?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am here.
Yeah, if you could identify yourself for the record and continue with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Jim Bacon, and I live in Ketchikan, Alaska. And thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I have participated, I own the fishing vessel Wave Dancer. I've participated in the Southeast Alaska salmon fishery for the last 30 years. I support HB 218, and I believe it provides an excellent tool for the aquaculture associations to use, should they choose to. I served on the board of directors of the Southern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association for several years in the 1980s, and I appreciate the point that the bill leaves the final decision as to how to approach their cost recovery in the hands of the board of directors of the associations. And I respectfully urge the committee to pass HB 218. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Are there any questions for Jim? Okay, we're going to move on to Petersburg then, to Mitch Ide.
Yes, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, go ahead. Identify yourself.
Hi, my name is Mitch Ide from Petersburg, and I'm also a Saner in Southeast. And I'd like to thank the committee for the opportunity to express my support for House Bill 218. And I believe this bill has a possibility of giving Saners in my fleet more fishing time, as it gives the department a little more flexibility in opening wild stock fisheries when they know the fleet would be at the hatcheries on the same day. It's just they have a better idea of where the catching capacity will be. Also, I'd like to say that most of the Saners in our fleet just would like to see a change in the cost recovery structure, period. They're really frustrated with what's been happening and would like to see a change. So I'd just like to urge you again to pass this bill, and thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Mitch? No, and we have Craig. Are you with us in Petersburg also?
Yeah, thank you very much. Craig Evans, I'm a Saner from Petersburg. I've been Saning since 1980. I don't have too much to say. I just wanted to mention that one of the reasons that this has come up in recent years is the way that the fishery has progressed. There are a lot more fish now, and the fish aren't worth as much. So consequently, cost recovery takes a lot more effort. It takes more fishermen, more tenders, and more processing capacity. And that's kind of put us in a time crunch at times during the season. And it has caused us to lose opportunities to catch some of the wild fish that we should have had access to. I would urge the passage of this bill. I think it will give Fish and Game a lot more flexibility to manage all of the salmon resources. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much for taking the time. Are there any questions for Craig? Okay. Thank you very much. And we'll move on to, I think we'll go here in the audience. Chuck Harleman from Revenue is here. Are there any questions anybody has? Are you here to testify, Chuck, or just any questions? If you got any questions, also we've got Stephen Doherty from the Attorney General's office online also. So if questions come up for either law or revenue, they are here and available. So we'll move on to Jason Wells from Valdez. Are you with us, Jason?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I've testified in the Fisheries Committee on this bill. I give you a little background. I'm name is Jason Wells. I'm a lifelong Alaskan, 42 years of commercial fishing. I worked with a private nonprofit hatchery system for 26 years. My current position is that of Executive Director of Valdez Fishery Development. That's a position I've had for 18 years. I've been following House Bill 218 since it was introduced. At this time, the bill is quite a lot improved from what it was several weeks ago. I still have fault in the finding. Page 1, lines 7 and 8 there, where it references direct sales by hatcheries. Our experience at Valdez Fisheries, we have saved the commercial fishermen 86 million pounds and $10 million in the past 10 years by being able to go out and do direct sales and have the processors compete against each other for our fish. I really think it's a negative bent to talk about doing away with direct sales or minimizing them. They are the strongest tool that we have in the salmon industry right now to push prices up, which they've done at our facility. The only other point I have in this bill is that it's very important that this bill remain voluntary at the discretion of the board of directors of the hatchery corporations. That's all I have, and thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions for Jason from Valdez? Thank you very much for taking the time. We'll go to the audience now, and Bobby Thorstensen.
Do we have to?
Thank you, Chairman Samuels, members of the committee. My name is Bob Thorstensen. I'm here in my capacity as Executive Director of Southeast Alaska Saners. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I represent a group of commercial fishermen in the Southeast Alaska Saners who support House Bill 218. We believe it will improve our harvest quality in the hatchery terminal harvest areas. It will improve our market timing and predictability of our processing and our harvesting. It will allow us to have a direct user fee instead of the current system if we're able to do this. And it also will instill more of a sense of fairness between the fishermen and their sales and production of the hatcheries right now. We do not ask the hatcheries be asked to do something they do not wish to do. This is why HB 218 has permissive language. The hatchery has the ability to enter into an arrangement to replace cost recovery. Either they can enter into the arrangement or they can choose not to. So we would urge you to pass House Bill 218. Also would like to mention that United Fish of Alaska, Cake Vessel Owners Association, and the Petersburg Vessel Owners Association also support House Bill 218. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thanks for taking your time with us today. And we'll move on to Sitka to Peter Esquiro. Are you with us, Peter?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, if you could state your
name. This is Peter Esquiro. I'm general manager of the Northern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association. We, too, have testified pertaining to this bill in the House Special Committee on Fisheries. And, you know, I must say that you know, the bill has evolved quite a bit over the last few weeks, but suggests that perhaps it still has some evolution through which to move. First of all, I'd like to point out on I guess this is a question referring to on page 2 to line 5 and 6. At line 5. It starts on 4, actually. The Commissioner of Fish and Game, after reasonable consultation with the hatchery permit holder, affected fishermen, and other interested or knowledgeable parties. I am a little concerned about who who these other interested and knowledgeable parties might be pertaining to, you know, the operations of, you know, of the hatcheries. I'd like to then point out an item on page 3, which for some of you, this may be a repeat of my testimony in the Fisheries Committee, and that is I still believe that at line 8, having representatives of affected commercial fishermen is redundant, since we have affected commercial fishermen on our board of directors who would be actually be part of this system of deciding whether or not to do this. Also on page 3, I'd refer to line 11, and where it refers to maintenance of a reserve fund of up to 100% of annual operating costs, and I would suggest that that should continue with of the corporation. Since we have a cost recovery program that has many different facets, that has several different cost recovery opportunities going in to make up the whole, it would seem that to consider this separately is not a good thing for us anyway. Also on page 3, beginning at line 14. Let me start at line 11. In setting the rate for the assessment, the department shall consider the estimated return and harvest of salmon in the terminal harvest area, the project price to be paid for salmon in the region, the amount of the existing reserve held by the hatchery permit holder. I would suggest that that last line, the amount of the existing reserve, is not related to the issue that's really before us. And would suggest that possibly that line be eliminated. That is very much a part of the fiduciary responsibility in determining those levels of the NSRA board of directors, and I still believe that. On page 3, at line 24, beginning at line 23, the legislature may also appropriate funds collected under this section to the Department of Revenue. That probably actually need to consider the Department of Fish and Game also, because there are, you know, undoubtedly somebody, if we choose to do this, somebody is going to have to be out there making sure that, you know, that there's plenty of enforcement out there. Now, some of you heard that enforcement is out there at every opening. Well, that's not quite right. At times there is enforcement out there, but it hasn't been there all the time. Finally, you know, I would feel a lot more comfortable if we had nailed down some of these details, you know, particularly as it relates to enforcement. I also feel that there are some other related issues that will be discussed before the NSRA board, before considering moving to this type of system. One of the things that's been brought to my attention recently is the effect that moving from the present cost recovery system to an assessment, totally assessment type system, and what the impact will be on the various size seine boat operators. So, undoubtedly, there will be more issues that will come up that will need to be ironed out. In closing, this has come at us fairly rapidly over the last few weeks and months, and you know, I don't quite understand the rush in trying to get this through. So, with that, I'd like to thank the committee for their time, and thank you for considering our perspective also.
Okay, thank you very much, Peter, and I'll ask the sponsor to come up and ask some of those questions here, if you could come back in.
Thank you again. For the record, I'm Ian Fisk from Representative Thomas's office.
Let's start with the question on page 2, line 5, and the other interested
language,
other interested or knowledgeable parties? How broad and why was it phrased that way?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are probably a number of people that out there that have information that would be relevant to, the process. We're trying to keep it open and trying to keep, the process open so as many people that have input can bring it forward. And in terms of the affected commercial fishermen, it's important to note that although the board on which that employs Mr. Esquiro at Northern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association does have a majority of commercial fishermen on it, there are other aquaculture facilities which do not have a majority of commercial fishermen and aren't required to have any. Only the regional aquaculture associations by statute must. So that's why, we're trying to make this something that covers any hatchery that wants to do it. Let's see, what was next?
Page 3, line 8, representatives of affected commercial fishermen.
Thanks. I'm glad you took better notes than I did. Same idea. The same concept applies there, representatives of affected commercial fishermen, because, again, some hatcheries do not have representation on the board or do not have a majority, even though the hatcheries were created to produce fish for the common property. And I believe the next one was the addition of corporations.
Of the corporation on line 11 at the end of costs, I'm thinking.
Uh-huh. I think, we have, as Mr. Esquiro pointed out, we've been working with them through this process, and we'd be willing to discuss adding that in before the next committee of referral if it seems like we've been working through a number of issues with them, and that's subject to discussion. I mean, part of the issue is,
as Mr. Esquiro pointed out, we've been working with them through this process, and we'd be willing to discuss for the next committee of referral.
Okay. Here to have a.
Like we've been.
Echo.
How do you do that again?
Got an echo.
Magic.
That seems to me, Mr. Fisk, that's almost just a technical correction of the corporation. I didn't see that's a policy change at all. We've also been joined by Representative Kapsner, for the record, also.
Long time ago.
A long time ago, yes.
A long, long
time. And I think the same would be true of the amount of the existing reserve, Mr. Chairman. And so I would say, as far as the following question that I think.
One second on the certain amount of reserve. If mm-hmm. the department shall consider the amount of reserve held by the. I'll pass that question. I think I agree with the language. And the last one, the legislature may also appropriate. We could appropriate money for anything we want to. I don't know. You must be trying to make a lot of different people happy. We could push Fish and Game. We could put Department of Law. We could put anything we want in there. We may appropriate anything we want.
Well, it's just a reminder, Mr. Chairman, that if you so decide. right. I mean, and we could list any number of departments that might be involved. I mean, as far as the issue of enforcement, though, I did want to address what Mr. Esquiro said. Because this is in a terminal harvest area, Department of Public Safety, which enforces the regulations, fisheries regulations, I mean, the way they work, you never know where they're going to be, and they're not there at every opening. That is correct. But, I mean, from my own experience, I remember fishing for 5 days in this one area that was open and never saw them, never heard a plane or saw a skiff come by, and then on the way out of that area, they were checking every one of us and had been. Actually, they had been in the woods scoping every boat that was fishing there. And the enforcement or the penalties in this bill are pretty severe to a fisherman. I mean, if someone violates the laws here, they can lose their boat, they can lose all the fish that they caught that are on board, they can lose their gear. It's pretty significant, and that takes a step towards enforcement, and just the knowledge that they are lurking with black helicopters, it's enough, we believe, to keep people honest. Were there any further questions that I didn't take notes on?
I believe that was the questions that Mr. Esquiro pointed out, and we'll just mark those for committee discussion a little bit later. We still have one person left to public testimony still. So Steve Reifenstuhl from Sitka. Are you with us, Steve?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much. I appreciate being able to testify, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon. I work for Northern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association, and I'm speaking in opposition to the bill before you. However, I am just the messenger for seiners, trollers, and gillnetters that are opposed to this bill. So I want to explain a little bit how NSRA is set up. NSRA represents the interests of the fishermen, and the way they do that is NSRA has a 25-member board of elected fishermen, elected through a certified ballot, just like you on the committee. They are nominated and run in an election. Any of the same troll or gillnet permit holder can hold or can vote for their gear representative. They can't cross over, trollers can't vote for seiners and so forth. So the permit holders are electing their representatives on the board, and that the permits in Southeast are about total about 3,200 permits for all the gear groups, and they're all eligible to vote for people on the NSRA board. Therefore, the NSRA board members represent and look out for the interest and financial health of all fishermen. When the proponent of this bill made a presentation to my board last month regarding the substance of Bill 218, the NSRA board unanimously voted to oppose the bill. When the board members asked about the details, the response was, trust me, we'll take care of those later. And that was unsettling, I think you can tell, from the unanimous opposition to this from the board members. So what you have here is a majority of fishermen saying they don't want this bill and a few proponents that do. And I would like to echo that I don't see what the rush is. We can continue to work on this, and as Mr. Fisk has pointed out, we have had discussions with Representative Thomas and other representatives and fishermen about this, and we can continue doing that. So there's not a rush to pass this year, especially considering the opposition of so many fishermen. So if the bill truly has merit, the proponent should work with the majority of fishermen who oppose it in order to iron out the wrinkles rather than cram it down their throat. NSRA is one of the most successful organizations of its kind, and there is a reason for that. On average, 80% of the fish that we produce go to the fishermen, 80%. The NSRA Board of Fishermen want to protect that track record, and they don't see Bill 218 as the path to taking them there. Now, I've spoken to some of the supporters of this bill, and even a number of them think the bill should be withdrawn for this year and to work with the other fishermen and continue this perhaps next year. We have always been open to working closely with fishermen because we really represent them. We're not, Pete and I are not separate entities. We just work for the fishermen to do the best job possible, and I think our track record speaks for itself. I guess the last thing I'd like to say is that I'm on the ground at Hidden Falls every year during the same fishery, and protection was out there one time last year, and I had to work for 2 days prior to them arriving to make sure they would be there for an opening. So to say that protection is just out there on a regular basis is not really the case, and they are fed very thin. They had to run all the way from Juneau, in this case, to get out there. So it's not a simple matter of someone being out there on every opening, particularly if you're going to have multiple openings or more openings than we normally would have if this bill were to pass and then be implemented by the association. Thank you very much for your time, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I really appreciate it. And that's all I have for now. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Steve. I've got a question for you from Representative Ledoux.
I don't know. Maybe I'm missing something, but since this bill is in the permissive rather than the mandatory,
just keep it there.
I guess I'm not sure why your organization would mind having that as another tool.
Well, I guess I would go back to saying that the board of directors heard the same thing, but there's a lack of trust and a concern that a may would get changed to a shall, and furthermore, they don't think they would use this if it were passed. But the answer, if it does get passed with may language or permissive language, at this point, the board would not choose to use it, but there is concern that that could be altered. And you do mention our organization. I, of course, spoken to the other organizations across the state, and I'd say they mostly want to keep their head down on this, and I can understand that. Just because you're not hearing from them today doesn't mean that they don't have some of the same concern.
Okay. Any further questions for Steve? Senator Vailkin?
Well, you know, I find that hard to swallow because if they've got the same concerns, you know, why aren't we hearing from them? I mean, it's hard to say, yeah, there's a silent majority out there that agrees with you, but, you know, that's not, we need to hear from them. And I can't, I'm going to support this bill because I'm not hearing from them. I can guarantee you that.
Okay, well, I guess you have to go with what you have heard. And I think that what I'm telling you is you're hearing from a lot of fishermen through Pete and myself because we're representing those fishermen. And as I mentioned, there's 3,200 permit holders in Southeast, and they elect the people that are on our board of directors, and they have heard and understand what this bill is seeking to do. And they are in opposition to that.
Okay. Representative Ledoux? No?
No.
No?
No. This is Ian Fisk again, Mr. Chairman. If you wouldn't mind my responding to a few of the points made by Mr. Reifenstuhl.
Are there any other questions from the committee members, Mr. Reifenstuhl? No? Okay. Go ahead, Ian.
Well, I would venture to say that if we were to walk to the docks today and just take an informal poll about what fishermen in this state feel about hatcheries, a lot of them would be supportive of hatcheries, as we are, but a lot of them would bring up the subject of cost recovery. Furthermore, this and the need to change the way the system works. I'd like to rebut what Mr. Reifenstuhl said using the comment forcing this down their throats, because this is not going to force anything down anyone's throat. This is not a new subject. The bill is new this year, yes. But the subject has been discussed in the industry for a number of years. A number of people brought it up during the Salmon Task Force process. And hatcheries and hatchery operators are well aware that this didn't just come out of the blue. And furthermore, the Northern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association does have a majority of commercial fishermen on the board. It's subject to the election process. He's correct about that. But I think it's a stretch to say that Mr. Esquiro and Mr. Reifenstuhl represent 3,200 commercial permit holders in Southeast Alaska. So I would leave it at that, Mr. Chairman, and thank you.
You, Representative Ledoux.
Yes, through the chair. Do you think that there's some concern with respect to the operators, the managers of the hatchery, of the hatcheries, that their membership, their boards, if they have this tool, will vote to use the tool, and perhaps the managers aren't comfortable with using the tool?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, that may be the case. I don't know. But I also want to reiterate that, you know, we're not here to impugn the hatchery system as a whole or the Northern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association. At their facility in Hidden Falls, it's likely to be the first place that we try to do this. However, you know, there has been interest expressed in other areas of the state, including Cook Inlet, about the need to have a mechanism by which a hatchery can choose to recover its costs this way. And I guess I'm straying a little bit off your question, but I think I would leave that up to the internal politics of the boards, which I'm not personally that familiar with. But again, the hatchery system has been very successful, and Ensura certainly is one of the most successful organizations out there. They do a great job of providing fish to the system as a whole. We just want to have another mechanism by where if they can be convinced to do so, that they can try to recover costs in a better way.
Okay, thank you. There's no other questions for Mr. Reifenstuhl. Thank you very much, Steve, for taking your time today. We've got Stephen Doherty from the Attorney General's office, I think, online still. And I've got him marked down here for just questions, but I don't want to miss him if he wanted to testify. So are you with us, Stephen?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. And I do have one thing that I would like to raise in regard to what Peter Squaro said. So, again, I'm Stephen Doherty from the Department of Law in Anchorage. And I limit my comments to Section D of the bill on page 3.
Okay, go ahead.
And just to the concept of taking out the amount of the existing reserve as something for consideration, one of the things that the standards that have been imposed in this new version of the bill is for the maintenance, for the development of the assessment, is consideration of the maintenance and development of a reserve fund of up to 100% of annual operating costs of the corporation. And in order to determine what the assessment should be, it would be necessary for the department to look at the amount of existing reserves. So I do think that that would be something that does need to stay in, and I think the language needs to be consistent between the two, whether we're talking about of the hatchery permit holder or of the corporation. The language should be the same in both places. Other than that, I would note that the changes here are just to, from the previous version of the bill, are to make the reduce the discretion of the Department of Revenue in setting the assessment, to make this so the legislature is setting the assessment, the department is merely implementing the assessment that was set by the legislature based on criteria that will necessarily vary from year to year, so that it's not practicable for the legislature to go back every year and set a different assessment for each facility. It's something that it becomes necessary for the legislature to delegate that function, but it's still the legislature that is setting the assessment and not the department. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Doherty from the Department of Law? Okay, seeing none. Is there anybody else in the audience that wants to testify that has not?
Got a question for you.
Mr. Elkins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ian, the question I have for you is, SARA has some sort of a cost recovery program today, if I'm not mistaken. And how does this differ, or does this just set up a mechanism where everybody can do something similar?
Through the chair, Representative Elkins, the methods by which each hatchery, our hatchery association or chooses to do their cost recovery vary quite a bit. And Southern Southeast has a different program. They've indicated they don't think they really would need to do this anytime soon. But for SARA, it would be completely optional as well. And also, I will say again, as we've had in every hearing so far, that if an attempt to amend this bill were to be made to make it shall versus may, then the sponsor would no longer support the bill and would ask that it be returned to the Fisheries Committee, where it would die a permanent death. This is going to be, optional.
No, I thank you, Mr. Chair. I wouldn't want to change it, but I used to sit on that SARA board, and there's been kind of some concerns about why the managers don't like this. And when I served on the SARA board, I mean, we listened to our managers, and that's one reason SARA's been fairly successful. I mean, fishermen are successful at fishing, and the managers are successful at raising fish. So, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions for Ian? I do have one question for Department of Revenue, please. It's absolutely not a substantive question at all, but
on page 3, line 23, where the legislature may also appropriate funds.
Mm-hmm.
Is that throughout the statutes anywhere else? It seems.
For the record, my name is Chuck Harlemert. I'm with the Alaska Department of Revenue. Yeah, I see that language a lot. It's it's an indication of intent that doesn't broach the dedicated fund problem.
Okay. By that, we've also been joined by Co-Chair Ramos also. Okay, and still, is there anybody in the audience want to testify that it has not? Is there anybody online that we've missed? Okay. Hearing none, the public testimony is closed. Are there any comments or amendments to be made? I'd offer amendment that I make sure that it's not going to do something I don't think it's going to do, but add the words of the corporation on line 11 after the words annual operating costs. And that would accept. Is there any objection to that amendment? Hearing none, amendment 1 carries. Are there any other amendments? Oh, and what's the will of the committee then?
Mr. Chairman, I would move CS for House Bill 218, version 24-LS0544/L, as amended with individual recommendation and accompanying physical notes.
Okay. Is there any objection to that? Hearing none, 218 passes out of committee. We'll take a very brief at ease. Go back on record here. Next up on the agenda is HB 251, and what I'd like to do is accept a motion for discussion purposes to adopt 24-LS0770/F as in Frank as the working document. Your motion to do that?
I move.
So sure. Moved by Representative Ramos to accept 24-LS0770/F. Is there any objection to that? Hearing none, that is the document before us. Mr. Webb, go ahead.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Henry Webb, staff to Representative Samuels. House Bill 251 is sort of the logical conclusion of an idea that took place a couple legislatures ago that allowed people to own two permits. Commercial fishing permits in a salmon fishery. This legislation would allow the Board of Fish to assign additional fishing privileges for those who hold more than one permit in a salmon fishery. Already, market forces prompt permit holders to buy or sell their permits. This bill would not require anyone to buy or sell their permit. It would just simply allow them allow the board to decide how to incent the purchase of another permit by allowing additional fishing privileges. And it would also allow specific fisheries to deal with situations where low salmon prices have contributed to large numbers of outstanding permits or latent permits. The CS in front of you, we've done a couple things. It would specify that the board must consider this issue within the normal 3-year cycle, so you wouldn't be able to move it up the agenda and rush it through. You'd have to wait till the board came around to your area. Also, there's a technical amendment recommended by the Department of Law to conform this legislation with CFEC statute. And I think that the sponsor statement is longer than the bill, so it's pretty simple.
Just all of the bill does to start off with is we're allowing the Board of Fish to take a look at this, and the point of the bill, and we've had trouble putting the language in there, and we've thought of 1,000 different ways to try to put some sideboards on it, and we can't think of any ways that get around that darn constitution of ours. But the point of the bill is to let the board look at ways in some of these where they've got so many permits and the buyback probably not going to happen,
is to allow to get more net out of the water, where if I fish and Representative Ramirez fishes, I can buy his permit and the board could say, okay, we used to have four shackles of gear, and if I own both permits, I'm allowed to have three. I've got two, he's got two. And let the Board of Fish work out the ways to get around the details rather than having to come to the legislative process and do this every time. I can give another spiel. I said there's only a couple people here to testify. I can probably give you some of the pros and cons that I've heard as we've done the research on this bill also. Representative Ledoux.
I've got a question for you, Mr. Chairman. Would this allow the Board of Fish to allow a person with two entry permits to have a larger boat?
No.
Why?
Well, through the chair, it's my understanding that it would be up to the board to make those decisions. It doesn't prescribe that. It doesn't prescribe anything. It says the board will be able to determine what is, you know, allocative decisions and whatnot. They'll be able to determine what they want to do with gear or boats or anything under the sun. As long as it fits in with the Constitution and existing statute, they could decide the particulars.
So,
but it doesn't prescribe that.
So conceivably, for example, Bristol Bay, which is 32 feet, or Kodiak, which is 58 feet, under Section 3, under other conditions that the board considers appropriate, you might be able to modify that and allow for a larger...
Representative Ledoux, that's certainly not the intent of this piece of legislation. It is not the intent to allow more than a 32-foot boat in Bristol Bay.
I was just asking whether it would, though.
And we can certainly work on the language to ensure that the intent of this was to look more at the net in the water, the gear. If that's what you read in here, then we'll...
Uh-oh.
Intent here is...
Through the chair, the board can do that right now. The board can change. It's in regulation, the 32-foot... in Bristol Bay is in regulation. They could do that right now.
Okay. We'll think that through. Are there any other questions for myself or Mr. Webb right now? Okay, then we'll go to the public testimony. We've got first we've got Jeremy Kuhn with UFA.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, my name is Jerry McCune. I represent United Fishing of Alaska. We support this bill, and I'll just give you a little background, and then I'll answer the boat question, too, because I have that answer.
Fair enough.
Right now, you can own two permits in your name. You just can't engage the second one. But the Board of Fish just now did it so that in Bristol Bay, you can have two permit holders on one vessel and have an extra shackle of gear. They did that again. Which this legal for them to do that. So what we're attempting to do is there's 25 permit holders in the bay that own a second permit in their name right now. And all this does is let you go to the Board of Fish as a group that own the second permit and talk about something. Doesn't mean you're going to get anything. It might be something that's too outrageous for the board to even think about. So that's what it does, basically. And it's a really good way to do fleet consolidation if that fits your fishery, because you don't have to have any money. You don't have to have private or federal money. And it also gives a lot of these fleets options to look at that. It's not going to fit every fleet. But I just came off the meeting with I sit on the Board of Fish Restructuring Salmon Panel, which also has just now finished their forum and the goals on restructuring proposals that they come in. And I imagine this would fit under a restructuring proposal. Birds. So if you have a restructuring proposal like this or a different idea, it's probably going to go in the restructuring batch, which the Board of Fish is going to look at closely, more closely than the regular proposal. It might take longer time to get through the board, and they're going to also have public hearings in that area, and they're going to talk to all the permit holders in that area. So I would imagine this is a restructuring proposal. If it came into the board, and they would put it in that category, which would have public hearings. And so that's that. On the boat issue, the 32-foot is in regulation, so the board has that preview. The 58-foot was taken out of statute and put in area by area that you could bring it up in Prince William Sound, you could bring it up in Southeast, or you could bring it up in Kodiak. But you have to go before the board and argue that to remove the 58-foot limit. And you have to come up with a size, 60-foot, 65, whatever that may be. But that's already been done, so the Board of Fish can entertain those proposals, which there hasn't been any so far. And after reading all the Bristol Bay input after the optimum number study, I read all those letters, and there was lots of options that people thought, but one option they didn't want to pay for is a fleet consolidation out of their own money, which I can't blame them. It'd take a lot of money because there's a lot of permit holders out there, but they thought this one option here would be one option for them to look at to do their fleet consolidation out there. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I conclude my testimony.
Okay. Any questions for Jerry? No? Thank you very much. Next, we're going to go to Kodiak, to Peter Thompson from Kodiak. Are you with us, Peter?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Go ahead and state your name for the record and continue with your testimony.
You bet. Thank you. My name is Peter Thompson, and I've lived and fished out of Kodiak for 25 years. And I've held a Bristol Bay salmon permit for 18 years. I want to thank the sponsors of this bill and encourage them to continue to push this legislation forward. The salmon industry has been an economic disaster in the last 5 or so years, and we need to look at anything and everything that can make it more economically viable for those that attempt to remain in the salmon business. Fleet consolidation is a concept whose time has come. After 18 years involvement in the salmon business, I'm frustrated at all the talks, the studies, the task forces, the discussions, followed by no real action. Waiting for the state of Alaska or Uncle Ted to bail us out or buy back permits is over. Passing this bill and giving the Board of Fish the tools to effect change is a start in the right direction. The ability to take private sector money and put it to work in reducing fishing effort for the economic benefit of all vessels is a great concept. Its effects are immediate in that for every stacked permit in Bristol Bay, 100 fathoms of net are removed from the water. Now, I just did a little math on this, and just to put it in a perspective, there's 1,857 drift permits in Bristol Bay, allowing for 5,571 shackles of drift gear. If just one-third of the permit holders stacked a permit either with another permit holder or one individual with two permits on a single vessel, that'd take over 22% of the gear out of the water in the bay. And to put that in perspective, that'd be equal to eliminating 70.5 miles of drift net. That's equal to a net being stretched across all the way from Bristol Bay, from the Southern District in Ugashik to the Northern Nooshigak District. And just to finish off here, I have a permit in support of House Bill number 251, currently signed by 32 Alaska limited entry permit holders, and the pretty much general consensus that I find just walking the docks here, talking to people about this, and Kodiak being a very much over-permitted fishery also, that people think it's a step in the right direction and a tool, a possible tool, for the Board of Fish. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Peter. Any questions for Peter?
Thank you.
But thank you very much. Next, we'll go here to Frank Oman with CFPC.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Frank Holman. I'm a commissioner at the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, and I won't take a lot of time. I just wanted to say that we support this, the concept in the bill of the permit stacking for the purpose of fleet consolidation and effort reduction. It's a simple tool that should be available to the board to use. They don't have to use it. It's not mandatory. People would have to come in a public hearing before the board from each fishery to state their case for using it, but it's we think a useful tool, and we support the concept.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any questions for Frank? Is there anybody else in the audience wish to testify? No? Okay. Is there anybody else online that we've missed wants to testify? With that, we'll close public testimony, and make a couple of comments on why I came forward with the idea was basically to follow up on what Mr. Thompson from Kodiak said, is to let the private sector start eliminating some of the
the net in the water. There are a couple of fears that have been brought up to me as I made quite a few phone calls on this to people in the industry that are not in the political arena but kind of on the ground people. One is that in Bristol Bay in particular, and this is not just a Bristol Bay bill, but that there's roughly 20 to 30% of the permits aren't used on an annual basis. Those are the permits will get sold. You'll actually increase the amount of net in the water. So if it's not being fished one year, a guy wants to sell it. The other concern that got voiced to me was that the actual locals, and when I mean locals, I do not mean just the residents of Alaska, but some of the smaller communities. I grew up in Naknek, that the people in Naknek would be hurt because they, for the most part, aren't going to be able to afford to buy a second permit, while somebody who is has another job and goes out there for that six-week stretch to fish has more money in the bank, or somebody that some of the Seattle people might be able to buy, and you're going to hurt the actual people on the ground. But all in all, I moved forward with the bill. We tried to find language to put sideboards on it, but constitutionally we were told by several sources that we can't say this permit can be sold. You know, we tried to say it had to be fished 4 years in a row before you could sell it as a second permit. We tried to do a lot of different things. Henry and I put a lot of work into it, and we kept running into roadblocks. But what I keep coming back to is that it's not mandatory, and the Board of Fish is a better forum to have this debate that we're having right now with everybody that knows the subject. All the communities can come forward with any concerns if it did move forward, rather than just saying no and doing nothing about the too many permits that we have in a market. So that's why I've moved forward with the bill. There were some concerns that were not voiced in testimony today, but I wanted to make sure that all the concerns that I'd heard in my research were actually on there. I still believe in the concept that the marketplace is going to take care of it better than a non-existent government buyback is ever going to. So, and also the information, the testimony, both from Mr. Webb and Mr. McCune from UFA, the boat length, I can certainly do some more research before this gets to the floor, but if it's already their prerogative now, then we're not changing that. We're certainly not encouraged that they change that. But I think that if it's already in regulation now, then that shouldn't be a concern really also. We're not changing anything there. So are there any other questions on the bill or comments on the bill?
No, I think it's
pretty good. It's trying to do something. So with that, I'd accept a motion to move the bill forward.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be pleased to move the CS for House Bill number 37.
251. Oh, 37 is long gone.
I'd be happy to let Representative Elkins help me out here.
Mr. Chairman, I would move a committee substitute for House Bill number 251, version 24-LS077-F, with individual recommendations and accompanying physical.
Any objection to moving 251 from committee? Hearing none, 251 moves. We are done for the day. We will start hearing testimony on 241 on Monday. I don't know if that bill will move out on Monday. There's a lot of people I know that have contacted my office that have opinions on that, and I'll try to do some more research on 241 as well. And I don't know what else is on the calendar for Monday.
This is a good job.
It will actually be on, I know Monday will be HB9 Agriculture Day, HB269 Hazardous Substance Release Liability. With that, we're adjourned. We're at recess until Henry tells me what I forgot to do. No, you're fine. We're adjourned.
Ralph, this is a good go, Ralph.